Accession number 16406, Reel 1.
Mr. Bell, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
Monmouth Street in Gypsyville, Hull.
Which year was this?
January the 25th, 1918.
What did your father do for a living?
He was an engineer.
Did you go to school in Hull?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
I went to Selby Street West until they opened Francis Askew School. Then I was at Francis Askew School for 12 months and then had to move again. And I went to St. George's Road and then I did a year at Technical College.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
I'd be 15.
Did you get a job?
Yes, apprentice engineer.
Did you join the Royal Naval Volunteer Reserve before the war?
Oh, yes. The thing was that by that time, by, say, 36, when things were hotting up, you know, I'd changed my job by then. I was in the Midland Bank after that, and I was in the office in Paragon Square. And right across the road from us, there was always a chap from the Mail with placard, you know, Italy invades Abyssinia, and we knew war was going to come, it was inevitable. And I didn't want to be a foot slogger. And this advert appeared in the Hull Daily Mail asking for volunteers to go and sign up or be interviewed for joining the Humber Division RNVR. Well, in due course, we were asked to attend Trinity House and we did our medical inspection. Well, out of hundreds of people that went, there were only 108 of us picked out. At a later date, there was some more taken on, but the original 108 of us were the nucleus of the Humber Division RNVR. We reported for drills once a week at Trinity House, did our square bashing. Then HMS Calcutta came in to Albert Dock, and that was supposed to be our base ship. Well, I went aboard there and were issued with uniforms. And we went round the ship, shown round the ship by a chief GI, and he lifted the cover off the back of the blunt end of one of the twin 4-inch guns and said, that's what you'll be using. Well, it was on here for about a couple of months and then it disappeared again at the Calcutta, and we had to go back to Trinity House. Well, I had a week's holiday in August 1939, and during that period, the papers came to say that we were going away for a fortnight's annual training, which lasted 6.5 years. In due course, we mustered on Paragon Station, all jolly and happy, going down to do our training. We didn't know what was in store for us, I'm afraid. And we got to Chatham, and we were thrown in at the deep end, I'm afraid, because we were allocated to these different messes. And the first meal we got was a slice of corned beef and a chunk of bread. And then we were taken around the barracks by an Irish killick and then brought back to the mess again. Well, among our crowd was a man who was very well known, Tom Boyd. Well, he was with us, and this Irish killick picked on another lad of ours. There was only 18. And anyhow, Tom Boyd I've never seen anything so funny. You've seen these sketches of somebody being hit and floating along on the back and landing. This is what happened with Tom Boyd and this killick. And he couldn't...
Tom Boyd hit the killick?
Pardon?
Tom Boyd hit the killick?
Yeah. Nothing was done about it because the killick knew he was in the wrong in the first place.
I think we should explain that Tom Boyd was a well-known trawler owner.
Yes, and Tom had been through it the hard way. His father had sent him to sea on trawlers. And he was a wonderful fellow, was Tom Boyd.
What exactly was the killick doing to this lad?
I was hassling him and, you know, shaking him. But we were all, you know, pretty high by then, the treatment we were getting when we first went into Chatham. Nobody wanted us. We were supposed to be a fully trained Akaki unit, and all we'd seen was this blunt end of this 24-inch. Anyhow, things got organised a bit, and we went down to the gunnery school to do 24-inch training on two separate guns that were about 20 foot apart. We finished this training and we were mustered outside, I don't know what it was, the officers' quarters or what, to tell the number of us would been received our QR2s, QR3s rather, I beg your pardon, QR3. And, well, it was my number that brought it up and my name, B, because my official number was HDX1. I was made captain of a 24-inch gun that I'd never seen. Eventually, aboard the ship. But prior to that, they couldn't do anything with us in the barracks because by that time all the different reservists were being called up and there was thousands of men milling round Chatham barracks. And they put us in lorries, took us out into the dockyard with boxes of ammunition, and out in the dockyard there was so many 1914-18 war single barrel Orlikans, and said, "You're looking after these, you're dockyard defence." Well, we had nowhere to sleep, nowhere to eat, and practically mutinying, and they brought an old paddle steamer in, HMS Harlequin, for us to sleep aboard and feed on. And an old lieutenant who came to be in charge of us. He'd been out of the service and recalled again. Well, we made a very good job of it by the time after about a fortnight. We decided that we'd do 72 hours on duty and 72 hours off. And we used to come home to Hull in the 72 hours, go back again and do 72 hours on. Because the train fare from there at that time was only 26 shillings return from Chatham to Hull. But then we found that there was a station down the line from Chatham called Lee. And there'd no printed tickets for this station. And they just used to write LEE on. Well, we put DS on and used to come through and get to Hull eventually, but we used to buy a ticket when we were going back from Hull to Brough, a return ticket. And we used to get this Chatham to Lee, put DS on the end, come through and then have the Brough half to come off the platform. And we were going back one time and the ticket collector said, "Must be at Brough. Must be a battleship up at Brough somewhere." Anyway, that was one period. Then we went back into the barracks and we commissioned the HMS Curacao in, I think it was January 1940. And we went round to Weymouth to do our working up trials. And it was a bit loppy when we started doing a shoot one time, and we'd never fired a gun before. And to operate these guns, the captain of the gun had to close an interceptor, and that fired the gun. Well, I looked through this at my trainer and what do they call the other fellow? And this fellow was my trainer.
This is Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Wilson was my trainer. And he was being sick there. And we were training straight under the ready use lockers. So we didn't fire it that time. But we had quite an experience down in Weymouth. Then we came back and came up to Immingham to have our degaussing gear put on. But approaching the Humber, I'd never seen anything like it. All you could see was masts and funnels sticking out of the sea at the mouth of the Humber. And that was the reason we were going in for degaussing gear, because Germans had started dropping these acoustic mines. Then we went up to Rosyth. We were based at Rosyth for a while, doing East Coast convoys and out into through the Pentland Firth into the Atlantic, and escorting another one in. And then this happened for till April time, when we were loaded up with troops and went across to Norway to do a landing in Norway with these troops in the, and were accompanied by the Carlisle and a couple of other ships, and landed the troops. Then we were supposed to be ACAT guard ship up there and go round and round in the fjord. And then it was discovered we hadn't recovered the paravanes. So it was decided to recover these paravanes, and my job at that time was to hook on, as they called it, which was hooking the recovery wire onto the paravane wire. And with going at a slow speed, they must have got entangled around the under the keel of the ship. And heaving away these paravanes, and all of a sudden the snatch block in the bows and the wire hit me and smashed my leg. And so I was, when they came back to Scapa, I was put on a hospital ship.
Was your leg broken?
Oh yeah, it was smashed up. And they told me later it was my sea boots that saved it, really. I put on a hospital ship in Scapa, which was crewed by Indians, and everything you had, each meal, was curry. And I never ate curry for years after that. Then I landed at Aberdeen, and I was in a hospital, a place called Kingsseat, for 7 months, actually. Then I had to go back to Chatham to get me sick leave. I came home for a week's sick leave and went back to the depot again, Chatham. And messed about a bit in Chatham barracks. And then I was in the office of the RFR office, Royal Fleet Reserve office, and I got to know the drafting master at arms pretty well. And he says to me one day, There's a draft wanted at the HMS Curacao, your old ship, and they want an OD. I said, well, put me down as an OD and I'll go back to it.
What does OD mean?
Ordinary seaman. I wasn't an ordinary seaman, I was an ABQR3 by then. And there was quite a few drafts going up to Scapa, and we were put on this train at Chatham, which was a non-corridor train, and we went all the way up to Wick. And every time we stopped at a station, everybody dashed across the toilets. And if there was any of the people on the station, there were quite a few people at different places giving cups of tea out. We landed at Wick and it was terrible weather. And then we had to get the ferries that went out to our ships. And I got back aboard the HMS Curacao. And I was made... Well, by that time, I was made an A2 and put in charge of after HACP.
HACP?
High angle projection. I suppose it was forerunner on computers, you see. Everything was fed into this, and you sent the elevation, deflection and everything else up to the guns from it. And we started doing more runs from Scapa Flow, convoy runs out from Scapa Flow. Then we came back to Rosyth and we were doing a few more convoy runs from Rosyth. Then we went back up to the Scapa Flow again. And we got the job of taking ships out. And if we met, then we met the Queen Mary or the Queen Elizabeth coming in full of troops. And we used to escort them in. And vice versa, if they were going out, we used to take them out and meet a convoy coming in. But they used to do a zigzag with the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth. And we always said about the Queen Mary, she'll cut us in half one of these days, because she always used to go close to our stern or close to our bows, where the Queen Elizabeth used to give us a wide berth. Well, we've been doing this for a while, and then in October 1942, we went out to bring the Queen Mary in, and I went on watch at 12 o'clock, went down to the HACP, and then we must have met up with the Queen Mary, but I didn't see it, of course, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, there was such a crash, and we thought it had been torpedoed. And we went over on the starboard side. Well, the door out of the HACP was on the port side. Well, we couldn't get out. Anyhow, she righted herself again and we got out. And we went out into the flat, which led to the Marines' wash place. And there was nothing behind us because it had gone through just after where I was in the... after HACP. And we got in this wash place and there was an engine room uptake in the wash place. And we came up through there onto B gun deck where the chief engineer, Commander Lee, had taken the grill off on B gun deck where the engine uptake came up. Excuse me. And he said, well, you better go over the side, lads. And that's the last we saw of him, I'm afraid. Never saw him again. And so went over the side, and all I thought of was swimming away as far as I could from the ship. Because you'd hear these tales of suction taking you down. But to go back to the HACP, we always used to blow our life belts up and sit on them. But this particular day, we all had our life belts on. Why, I don't know. And of course, going over the side, blew our life belts up and went over the side. And I must admit, every one of the HACP crew got away from the ship. And, because there was a lot of oil about, and there was, I'm afraid a lot of people choked on the oil, they got the fuel oil down the into their lungs. And all I thought about was swimming as far away from it as possible. But there was a torpedo rating who had just had his 21st birthday, and somebody had given him a silver cigarette lighter. And he was bobbing down and then coming up with this lighter, and he was playing angry about this lighter because it wouldn't light. Well, wet, of course. And I swam round because there was nothing in sight. Only the Queen Mary disappearing into the distance. And the stern of the ship disappearing. And I didn't swim for any Cali floats around because I had this life belt on. And you saw Cali floats and floater nets, but fully expected the Queen Mary would have dropped a Cali float or two, but nothing happened in that respect. And then eventually I was in the water about 2 hours, 2 hours or 2.5 hours. The Brahman came up with its scrambling net over the side and got up on this scrambling net, and they gave us a tot of rum, and then I came out on the upper deck again to see how many more chaps were being picked up, and a whaler came. I don't know what whaler it was. It must have been a whaler from Brabama, but it was waterlogged. And there was chaps laid in the bottom of it. And there was chaps in the sea. One of them was a champion Yorkshire swimmer. Excuse me, can't remember his name. Phil Holtby. And anyhow, I pulled him out and I pulled another one out, but I'm afraid they died on the deck of the Brahman. They brought us back to Londonderry and were taken into this YMCA and had a hot shower and a change of clothing. But I don't think any of us stopped shivering for about 48 hours. And I think it was the second night we were there, the ladies who were running this said they'd arranged for us to go to a theatre. Anyhow, the Admiralty or somebody stepped in and said we weren't allowed to go because we might divulge what had happened. And then I think about the fourth day we were put on a destroyer and landed at Greenock. And the funny thing was that we were waiting for a train, and there was other Navy men walking about the platform, and one of them said, "Well, your lot must be off the Curacao." And we weren't supposed to say anything, but they knew it there. Well, we're taken and put on this train and came down to Chatham. And you had this silly rigmarole, even when you were survivors, of doing the joining routine, which meant that you had to go around every office, the different offices, like the drafting office, medical centre, dentist centre, stores, all of them. You had to go around and get your card stamped. Well, we had a wonderful PO that was said, well, there's Duke Downey, they called him. And he played up a bit and we were pushed through pretty quickly. And we came home on survivor's leave. And by the time we got home, they hadn't informed the next of kin. And next door but one to my mother, I was single at the time, one of the lads who was married, he lived with his mother-in-law, next door but one, Harold Egan. Well, I don't go out in the garden. Anyhow, the day after it had happened, my mother came upstairs and said, there's some young women to see you. Well, I came downstairs and it was widows. They didn't know they were widows then, but there was four of them. Bill Wood's wife, who was my best man, Harold Egan's wife, and two others. I can't remember who the other two were. And that was a rather a dreadful experience, asking me where their husbands were, and I couldn't tell them a thing. But going back a step or two, we'd recently been home from Belfast, where we were based at that time, to have 5 days leave because we're having a boiler clean. And about a week later, of course, I'd sent a telegram home to say Bob and I, who was my brother-in-law, Bob Markham, who was aboard the ship, sent this telegram to say that Bob and I were safe and well. Well, my wife didn't know what we're talking about, thinking it would be say we got back to Belfast all right. Well, we went down to Chatham, and as I said, and did our joining routine. The next day I was given a draft chit to go to America to pick up an LST. Well, nobody knew what the LSTs were. They were telling us it was Lone Sea Transport. You were going to America to pick a ship up to bring back to England. So a couple of days after I'd come back from my survivor's leave, I was home on draft leave and went to America, and we're at a place called Asbury Park. There was a big hotel taken over by the Navy for a depot, and we were the first lot in it. From there we went to Philadelphia to commission LST-320, which was Captain LST's ship. Our captain was Captain Burgess Watson. We came back to New York and loaded up with lorries and aircraft landing mats and all sorts of goods, and also had a small landing craft on our deck, which was crewed by Americans. Well, we left New York to go to Bermuda, and we hit a gale. And landing mats went over the side, and the elevator fell through, and the steering fell down. Well,